Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Winslow Wheeler, who has worked on national security issues for 31 years for members of the U.S. Senate and for the U.S. General Accounting Office. In 2002, Winslow authored an essay under the pseudonym Spartacus about Congress's reaction to the September 11th terrorist attacks, which led senators to ask for his resignation from the Republican staff of the Senate Budget Committee. He is now a senior fellow and director of the Strauss Military Reform Project at the Project on Government Oversight, and is the author of Wastrels of Defense, How Congress Sabotages U.S. Security. Welcome to Background Briefing, Winslow Wheeler.
Thanks very much, Ian. I appreciate it.
And Pentagon's Secretary of Defense Chuck Hagel's plans to downsize the U.S. military was unveiled. Particularly, the Army is getting a lot of publicity because they say it's going to be the smallest army since before World War II. But isn't the Army already changing into a focus on special forces? And in fact, that's true of all of the Marines as well, isn't it?
Well, yes. And the rhetoric that the Army is going to be smaller than it was before Pearl Harbor in this country is a bunch of hooey, to keep it radioable. The Navy is currently smaller than it was before World War One. The Air Force is much smaller than it ever was since the end of World War II. That's all meaningless rhetoric. They're trying to generate more money and creating some level of concern, if not hysteria, in the public as they pound the table for more money.
Well, aren't they also, though, wasting all of this money? I know 60 Minutes did a piece on the F-35, and we've talked about it over the years because it is the single biggest defense procurement project in world history. And it's a complete turkey. Aren't they in a situation now where they're running out of A-10s, which have served the country very well, and F-16s and F-18s, they're thinking about extending the line on them? Are we in a situation where the new stuff we're buying is worse than the old stuff that we're retiring?
Well, yes. I mean, to go back to the start of your question and to quickly answer, the 60 Minutes piece on the F-35 barely scratched the surface. Our existing inventory of airplanes is indeed extremely old. We can certainly extend their lifetime for another 10, 20 years, and we'll have very good airplanes by doing that. The F-35 is a step backwards, but getting it on performance, but getting it back to your basic point, here we are with a airplane, the F-35, that replaces the A-10, for example, at a cost that is about eight times the cost of an A-10. And we're getting a airplane for that can't perform the mission that the A-10 performs. So it's really a microcosm of our budget problems. We're paying more and we're getting less.
But aren't we using the A-10 in Afghanistan, and hasn't it proven? I mean, I'm not suggesting, you know, that I'm not picking weapon systems here because I'm not an expert on it. But my understanding is that that's something we're actually using, as opposed to this other thing that doesn't do anything well, the F-35, and that this whole stealth thing has turned out to be a huge scam because the Russians have the ability to detect them. So they built this stupid plane that's supposed to do everything for everybody and does nothing particularly well for anybody.
Well, you said it very well. And it does that poor performance across the spectrum of missions at huge cost, both to buy it and to maintain it. It's also a step backwards on maintenance costs. They always advertise these things as being a bargain on maintenance compared to existing airplanes. The cost per flying hour, for example, of the F-35 is going to be two or three times the cost of some of the airplanes it's replacing. It's really a problem. And going back to the Hagel budget for 2015, he is going to take some tiny little nicks out of the program, and otherwise it's full speed ahead. The problem is the plane can't go very fast ahead in an acquisition sense because it's having so many problems in its testing. that delays are inevitable. But of course, the right thing to do would be to cancel the program and replace it with competent designs of affordable and effective airplanes.
So, again, I'm speaking with Winslow Wheeler, who has worked on national security issues for 31 years as for members of the U.S. Senate and for the U.S. General Accounting Office. In 2002, he authored an essay under the pseudonym Spartacus about Congress's reaction to the September 11th terrorist attacks, which led senators to ask for his resignation from the Republican staff of the Senate Budget Committee. And he's now a senior fellow and director of the Strauss Military Reform Project at the Project on Government Oversight, and is the author of The Wastrels of Defense, How Congress Sabotages U.S. Security. So back to the headline of the idea that we're going to have the smallest army since before World War II. Isn't the army already heading in that direction of adding to special forces? They're also putting extra money into cyber warfare. Hasn't Afghanistan and Iraq taught us something about how boots on the ground end up being more, you know, like a magnet for trouble, that you don't really need a big footprint anymore?
Well, but in their own hearts, they're not cutting back the army because they want to avoid these kinds of commitments in the future. They'd be happy to run around the world doing these sorts of things. They have not learned their lesson. They're doing it because somebody's got to pay the bill for the expansion of complex, expensive hardware that the Air Force and the Navy want to acquire based on the so-called pivot towards Asia, where land forces are de minimis and long-range air forces and naval forces are on the budgetary upswing. And so it's not a, you know, it's not deep strategic thinking that's going into this downsizing of the Army. It's a budget fight, and the Army is losing.
So who's winning?
The Air Force and the Navy.
But the Air Force are the ones that are behind. They've got drones, but they've also got this F-35. They put all their eggs in that turkey basket, right?
Well, they're going to spend a huge amount on it. They also have super ambitious, you know, visions of continuing to buy $11, $12 billion aircraft carriers, $1 billion destroyers, and so on. The Army only recently canceled a program for a personnel carrier that weighs 70 tons, more, almost as much as the tank. The point being that their acquisition plans for the future are still totally out of control. There's been some decisions to take down some of the lower-hanging fruit of these programs, but in a basic sense, it's full speed ahead with the high-cost, highly complex kinds of weapon systems that the F-35 is the embodiment of.
Well, my understanding is that this huge behemoth that they built, the armored personnel carrier called the MRAP, they can't even get the damn things out of Afghanistan because they're so heavy.
Well, I was talking about the replacement, the ground combat vehicle.
Exactly, that's the replacement. But the current ones that have saved a lot of troops' lives, they're cutting them up for scrap metal because they're too heavy to get out of the theater in Afghanistan.
They can get them out of the theater if they wanted to. It's just expensive and inconvenient to them. The services don't want those vehicles. They didn't want them in the first place. And having all those 20,000 MRAPs lying around will get in the way of the plans for the new vehicle. And so, again, mass behind the, you know, frontage of a strategic decision is basically a budgetary decision.
Well, that's putting it, but that's putting it politely, Winslow Wheeler. You say it's a budgetary decision. It's a raid on the Treasury, isn't it? If you've got perfectly workable weapon systems like the MRAP and they're too inconvenient to get out of Afghanistan, so you just cut them up for scrap metal because you want to get a new, more expensive toy that may not even be as good as the old toy.
Right, and the raid in the Treasury is quite large. They're protesting that there's a shortage of money. There's no such thing. We're spending under the new 2015 level at a level of spending inflation-adjusted dollars of about our 2005-2006 budget. That level is scores of billions above what we spent on average during the Cold War in inflation-adjusted dollars. Our problem is not a shortage of money. Our problem is how we're profligately wasting the money that we have.
So what can you say about Hegel then? Is it just that, you know, the system just captures anybody that goes into that building, the Pentagon?
Sure as hell captured him. Before his nomination, he talked about the Pentagon budget being voted and the need to get it under control. And he has changed his tune 180 degrees. The word bloat has not passed his lips since he was nominated. And he's helping the Joint Chiefs of Staff stuff more money into the budget plan. A good example is the $26 billion so-called opportunity fund that they're going to dangle in front of Congress if they fund it, and they're going to go to any degree of lengths to get Congress to fund it.
Opportunity for what? What does that mean?
To buy more stuff. And the way they're going to game it is they're going to put their goodies in the basic budget for Congress to approve, and they're going to put funding for things like training and readiness in the so-called opportunity fund, so Congress has little choice. It's a really cynical budget game.
So then what about this overall picture, though, of that there aren't any real chances of big wars anymore, big land wars?
We don't know what the future holds. We have a perfect track record of predicting every future war precisely wrong. We need to plan for uncertainty. And those who say, oh, we don't need an army, or those who say, oh, we have to have special forces, they're just following, you know, today's trendy fad of what the wonks are saying these days. In point of fact, in the past, when we have gone for buying these kinds of complex air and naval systems, we found them to be quite useless in the kinds of wars we've ended up fighting. So we need to be very careful.
Right, but if you look at all the wars that we've fought since the end of the Cold War, I mean, it's pathetic. It's a joke. Panama, a tiny little country that the U.S. has occupied forever. Iraq twice, you know, and now that's a devastated country. Afghanistan, one of the poorest nations on the planet, and everybody that's gone into that swamp has been sucked into a quagmire. And, you know, what's the other one? North Korea, that's the big threat. A pathetic, failed state. It's true, it maybe has 5 or 6 or maybe 10 nuclear weapons, but that's more, you know, it's more dangerous to have a war with that place than not to have a war with it. You know, it's so crazy.
Well,
are we going to go to war with China?
Making a basic point, the size of your budget is no guarantor of who wins in the fight. Unfortunately, our huge budget has produced a rather feeble, fat and lazy dog. You know, we had every possible advantage over the Vietnamese, the Viet Cong and the North Vietnamese in that war, and we lost it. We were told to leave by the Iraqis with our tail between our legs, and look at the mess we left behind us. And the same thing is about to happen, a few variations on the theme, in Afghanistan. We have expended huge human and material treasure in these adventures, and look what we've gotten for it.
But I was suggesting, Winslow Wheeler, that, you know, does anybody seriously think we're going to go to war with Russia or China? I mean, you know,
we'll take an act of unimaginable incompetence to do that, but the purpose for China and Russia to these people is to justify more spending, and that's precisely what they're doing.
I see. So it's what Rumsfeld said about why he wanted to go to war in Iraq and why he was unhappy with Afghanistan was because there weren't any good targets in Afghanistan.
Well, it demonstrates how clueless that man was.
Right. Well, just in closing, Winslow Wheeler, you know, is there any way that any sanity can prevail? I mean, it just feels like a shell game where they keep talking about, you know, we're going to hell in a handbasket, and you've just pointed out we're spending more than ever in real dollars. Our threats have all but disappeared, and we just got through saying you'd have to be, and we're not going to go to war against China or Russia, but we're going to pretend that we need to be ready for that. And the best threat we can come up with is North Korea, and yet we have to spend more than we ever did at the height of the Cold War. I just wish that there was a national debate going on that reflected reality here.
Well, we do need a national debate about it. Unfortunately, it's both Democrats and Republicans who are alternatively doing nothing about it or trying to make it worse, both parties. And we need to educate ourselves about what's been going on and start reflecting our conclusions in how we behave in the political system in this country.
Well, Winslow Wheeler, I thank you so much for joining us here today.
It's my honor. Thank you very much.
Again, I've been speaking with Winslow Wheeler, who has worked on national security issues for 31 years for members of the U.S. Senate and for the U.S. General Accounting Office. In 2002, Wheeler authored an essay under the pseudonym Spartacus about Congress's reaction to the September 11th terrorist attacks, which led senators to ask for his resignation from the Republican staff of the Senate Budget Committee. He is now a senior fellow and director of the Strauss Military Reform Project at the Project on Government Oversight and is the author of The Wastrels of Defense, How Congress Sabotages U.S. Security. We're going to take a brief station break and we'll go to Mexico City for an update on whether or not the drug lord just captured will be extradited to the United States.